Expanding housing options in Utah will require expanding what our zoning allows. But what are the best ways of going about that? Answering that question is the topic of the latest installment in the new Utah Foundation study, Is the Middle Missing? A Guide to Expanding Options for Utah Homebuyers and Renters. Utah Foundation Vice President and Director of Research, Sean Tigan, is the principal author of the study. He and I explore the findings of the latest report in this edition of Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Peter Reichard. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
So we've released the fourth installment in the Missing Middle Housing Study, and the first three installments in this guide addressed first what Utah's housing problem is and introduces middle housing as a means of addressing it. The second part looked at the prevalence of middle housing in the four largest Utah counties, and we also looked at trends in those counties in terms of housing developments. The third part looked at current development practices, but mainly what Utahns' preferences are. We surveyed the people of Utah to see what kind of housing they prefer. This fourth part explores the obstacles and opportunities for increasing the supply of middle housing. And this is the final installment in the study. We will be releasing an executive summary as well. What did we find? What does the zoning look like in Utah? Is it heavily single family? Does it allow for the kind of missing middle housing that maybe is two or four family or is on a small lot?
Yeah. So there certainly are some obstacles. And like you say, zoning is probably one of the biggest ones, if not the biggest one. Just in terms of, like, if you look at Salt Lake County, 88% of the residential land in Salt Lake County is zoned for single family. So that doesn't leave a lot of room for middle housing. It may leave some room for, large apartments. And we're seeing large apartment complexes going up, particularly along transit corridors and downtown, but it doesn't leave a lot of space for that sort of middle housing, maybe duplexes, fourplexes, stuff that's really integrated in with single family communities.
Okay, so 88%, almost 90% of the residential land is single family zoned. So where are there opportunities to develop middle housing? As we're putting together this study, we work with Salt Lake County Regional Development, and they analyze the zoning in the county. What did they find in terms of where the opportunities are?
Yeah, there's a smattering of places all over the place. There's really not a centralized location for where this housing is. You certainly don't see it in a lot of areas, but where you do probably see the most of it is really along the south and southwest kind of edge of the county. And you're seeing a lot of planned urban development communities in those areas. And that really opens the door for really significant opportunities for this type of housing. And even some communities in those areas, they're just like, we're growing. We know that maybe the future isn't all about single family homes on quarter acre lots. So we're going to allow for more townhomes in those communities, particularly, really a big focus on townhomes.
And so in the areas that are still growing are actually some of the biggest opportunity zones for middle housing. If you were trying to do infill in one of the more developed areas, do you have a lot of opportunities?
You don't have a lot of opportunities. Really, if you're looking at doing infill in probably most places in the state, you're going to see that the barrier to you putting in a multi-unit housing development that's, instead of the kind of the typical single family in some of those communities, the big barrier is that you're going to need some kind of a zoning change or variance, and that's going to cost you a lot of time, which at the end of the day is going to cost you money. And so you see developers that are kind of steering clear of that middle housing type development because of those barriers. That said, you look at Salt Lake City, Salt Lake City is pretty built out. However, they do have some available land left. They're actually looking currently at a rezone or kind of a change in text to one of the zones, the RMF30, which is residential multifamily 30 zone. And the idea there is they're very explicit about seeking to develop more middle housing in those areas. So you might see some more infill in areas around Salt Lake City that will allow for middle housing. And that might take a year from now, it might be 6 months. They're really looking at some of the possible negative effects, really, of increasing development before they allow for this zoning change.
Sure. And if it's not allowed, then as you said, you're facing time, cost, a lot of effort. And maybe at the end of all of that, you don't get the change you need anyway. And so maybe you've wasted time, effort, and money trying to get a rezone or a conditional use approval.
Yeah, and really the big barrier there is if you've got a lot of money and you've got a lot of time to sit on some land, you might be like, well, why would I worry about a little development and some infill in this community? Why not go somewhere and build a bunch of homes? If you're a small developer, you may not have the funds set aside to be able to sit on that and to kind of risk a change to the zoning that allows you to put in that middle housing development.
Right. Now, to be clear, we're not in this report coming out against single family zoning. We're neutral, I guess you could say, on whether it's good or not, or, you know, where it might be best.
I would actually say single family zoning is probably good in some ways for some people. Some people really, if the market wants that single family zoning and that single family housing in an area, maybe that's a positive thing. But to only have maybe single family in most areas at the exclusion of a possible housing type that could help answer some of the questions and might address some of the problems around housing costs and other housing issues in the state and around the country, I think maybe kind of worth considering looking beyond really what we've been considering the main type of housing in most communities in that single family zoning for the last several decades.
Now, another challenge can be parking. If you develop a fourplex and you're supposed to have a certain amount of parking, for instance, then that potentially off-street parking, I should say, then that potentially takes away some of your buildable space. Talk about the parking challenges.
Yeah, that's certainly a big issue. I mean, parking, if let's say you want to build that fourplex, Peter, and you're requiring in the city two parking spaces that are off street for each of those units, you know, that takes up a lot of space. And that would probably make it impossible to even produce that fourplex in a lot of areas, considering other zoning limitations. So, you know, there are some ideas to address that. There are some suggestions to say, you know, what if the units are relatively modest? Maybe let's say they're 800 square feet or something, which is, you know, pretty small for most housing around the state of Utah. Let's say that you've got something that's 800 square feet. Maybe you don't need to require two off-street parking spaces, maybe just one. And then maybe instead of needing those eight parking stalls, you only need four. And maybe that does make it both physically possible, but also pencil out in terms of, you know, incentivizing the builders to build those types of units.
Now, if I wanted to do a condominium type development where I'm not building a fourplex to rent, but I'm building a fourplex to sell or a sixplex to sell, what are the challenges?
One of the reasons why we're seeing so many townhomes being built in terms of attached single family homes, but they're attached by, you know, a wall, is because it works in terms of financing. The problem with some condominiums, and that's like instead of a side-by-side townhome, maybe you want to have something stacked where you've got somebody living downstairs, somebody upstairs, maybe it's like you say four units. One of the big issues really is the financing of that project. And that barrier has really arisen out of the Great Recession. During the Great Recession, and just beforehand, really, we saw a lot of condoization of units all around, particularly along the Wasatch Front, but a lot of condos being built all over the place. That housing bubble burst. A lot of people were foreclosing across the market, but they were really particularly foreclosing in condos. In addition, the condos maybe that had been built that hadn't been sold yet. So you've got these condo developments, but you haven't sold all the condos. Some of the developers there foreclosed upon those. It became a riskier bet for banks. And banks since then have said, we're not quite as excited about financing these units. There are also some other issues that you really don't see in single family units or even in apartments, where a developer might be on the hook for somebody who bought a condo. 5 years later, they have an issue with something and they suggest, hey, you know what, I'm going to either get together with my condo association or whatever, and let's go after this developer and get him to fix this thing. You can buy insurance against that sort of liability, but then that's going to cost more for both developer and the architect. There are some big barriers in place. There are some ways around those. But when you look at condo development, one of the reasons why you're not seeing as much being built today is because of the hurdles that have been put up for developers.
Okay, now let's turn to some of the opportunities or areas where policymakers or developers can make moves to open the way for more of this middle type housing. We talked about parking being a challenge, and really, in the report, we talk about the fact that local policymakers need to take a hard look at their parking needs to see if the requirements suit the actual needs. Also, whether the payoffs in terms of driver convenience are worth the trade-offs in housing affordability. Talk about some of these other approaches we can use to maybe adjust our land use laws to open the way for middle housing.
One potentially relatively easy way to open the way for middle housing is with overlay zones. And so overlay zones are, it's something that you might put in place to protect a historic neighborhood. You could do something where you say, hey, let's put an overlay zone in that helps incentivize some of this middle housing, so that if you do have maybe multifamily, those small multifamily housing, and you'd like to put it in here, maybe you won't be required to maintain that off-street parking that you would otherwise. Or, it may allow you, for instance, to build something that, let's go back to that 800 square foot unit. Maybe since it's so small, we don't need to charge the impact fees that we would otherwise. So it kind of incentivizes that development.
Zone, to be clear, it's a special zone that you place over the existing zones. You overlay it with the idea that there's a specific goal that you want just for that area, and that otherwise the existing zoning pattern should prevail.
Yeah, thanks for that. And maybe you'd see that in a main street area of a small downtown or something, in order to incentivize some development that might not go in otherwise, but also doesn't really get into it doesn't fly in the face of what a lot of people want. And that is, these single family developments. So it doesn't take away maybe what you have, except it allows for more development potentially in these very targeted areas. So maybe you want to do that along transit.
Why not just change the zoning? Why not just go in and change single family zones to small multifamily zones?
Yeah, so that's a possibility too. And that's something that places are doing. There are some, I think part of the reason is because you're going to see maybe a little bit more resistance to some of those bigger zoning changes. I guess one of the barriers really to the development of middle housing is zoning regulation, and the reason why you might not see changes to it, even if city council persons or county commissioners or whatever are interested in it. It's because, they're working at the behest of the public. One of the things we found is that really the people that show up to city council meetings, for instance, are there to oppose changes to zoning in their neighborhoods. They sure. They don't want to see a lot of those changes.
So maybe there's an opportunity to, try this on an experimental basis where you're maybe just allowing two family, and maybe just in certain areas where people maybe are more willing to accept it, or on the edges of neighborhoods, that sort of thing.
And to do a little bit of that, I think it's not a bad idea. One of the reasons there was a lot of backlash to even small multifamily middle housing type development back in the 70s and 80s because people saw it as ugly. Like West Valley City, four decades ago was pretty open to a lot of different housing, but because of the backlash to some maybe not so great duplexes and fourplexes that went in, they really restricted and said, you know what, let's focus on single family housing going forward. And now they're kind of revisiting it again, just like a lot of communities are, because they're trying to figure out how they can keep some affordability in their house, in their neighborhoods and communities, even in terms of new development.
This is something that you talked about in a couple of the previous reports, you know, the importance of getting a track record of good design to sort of bring up the comfort level. You know, I mean, I guess the idea is that maybe some of the opposition in the past was for good reason. People didn't want monstrosities going into their neighborhoods.
Yeah, and like in a past report as well, we looked at what people want. People like single family looking development. And if you can do something that is, you know, small middle housing development that actually looks like the single family, really fits in with single family communities in a nice way, then you might see people saying, you know what, this is actually kind of cool. Like I like that there's a little bit more activity around this neighborhood. There's a little bit more, you know, maybe it can maintain a bit more corner shops or little cafes because we have, you know, a little bit, for lack of a better word, a little bit more density that maybe can maintain some of those businesses.
Yeah. Now, you also in the report talk about form-based codes. What are your thoughts about form-based codes? What are they?
Form-based codes are a newer type of approach to zoning. And in the past, you know, since the early 1900s, we've really focused on zoning as separating out uses. So you've got homes over here that people are living in, and then you go over here to do your shopping, and then you go over here to make widgets or whatever. So you're really separating these types of uses. Form-based code says, you know what, do whatever you want, really. It opens it up to say, you can either develop something that somebody's going to live in, or you can develop something that somebody can shop at, or you can, if you're going to be building violins or shelves or whatever, you can do that here, as long as the building that you're in maintains kind of an integrity that fits in with the neighborhood, so that you have some form that's not a monstrosity, that people in the community are behind and they say, you know, I don't mind this kind of a development over here. I think it fits in with the community. It's going to look kind of cool. There's maybe a lot of windows, some cool facade or whatever the case may be, and then do whatever you want there. And you're seeing more and more of that in communities around the U.S. If you go along the relatively recent addition to the UTA transit line, you look at the tracks streetcar that goes east and west through South Salt Lake and into Sugar House, you see a lot of form-based development there that you might see a business that's like, why is there a business sitting right here? And it's like, well, you know, why not? I mean, there may not be a road that gets you to that business, but there's a streetcar, and there's a lot of you don't have to walk far, and you've got some units above you, and there is a certain character that makes that really look nice. You're seeing a lot more of that happening also kind of around Main Street in South Salt Lake, but in a lot of particularly Main Streets in small communities along the Wasatch Front.
Yeah, what you're describing really calls to mind traditional American downtowns maybe, or Main Street areas, where you had the shop on the bottom and the shopkeep living above, and maybe above that another apartment or two for rent. And a lot of those communities, you go around the world and you see that pattern block after block of that. And it's part of what makes those cities charming.
Yeah, I think you're seeing a resurgence of that in numerous places because people see that does create a certain charm, and it does create a certain community that you might not see elsewhere. And you know, speaking of people living down or upstairs and having a shop downstairs, you're seeing more of this kind of live work space where the proprietor of the establishment lives on the premises. That's a type of middle housing that really hadn't been seen much at all. We saw a little bit in Salt Lake in the mid 2000s, and now we're seeing a little bit of that in other places.
What's the big takeaway from this multi-part study? And we seem to be saying, okay, yes, There are challenges, but there are also ways to increase home ownership opportunities and expand rental options. And we could do it in a way where we build in quality of life. We're not diminishing the character of our neighborhoods. Yes?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the gist of it, is there are ways to do this that can benefit communities in many ways. The big caution is, like with form-based code, but with any zoning changes, is to really get the community involved and really get them to understand some of the problems that we're experiencing in terms of home prices and rents. And, you know, a lot of people think a lot about that, but maybe you don't think about it as much if you already own your home. But if we can consider some of those challenges in terms of home ownership and even rent, covering rent for, you know, for our kids, for younger Utahns, we might be a little bit more amenable to allowing some of this middle housing. Right now, we in Utah and all of our little communities are really not allowing the market to tease out what we as Utahns want. And in terms of purchasing and living in some of these middle housing units, if we allowed for more development of middle housing, we might find that it adds to a community character and charm that Utahns are really after.
Thank you, Sean. Really interesting stuff. A lot of people are talking about this topic now. Good talking to you.
Thank you so much.
This has been Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Follow our work at utahfoundation.org.